The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.
On the gun deck at the bow, please move aft. We're about to fire a gun right above your head. Ready? Fire!
Yeah, that's with about a quarter pound of gunpowder in there. We've put up to probably about a pound in there, you know, for July 4th and times like that, you know, so we like to draw attention to ourselves. And the crowds on the shore love it, so it's lots of fun.
We're on board the USS Constellation, docked in the Inner Harbor, a ship that's a storage ship in the U.S. Navy, and a major tourist attraction here in the city. We're here with Chris Rosem, who is the executive director of Historic
Ships in Baltimore.
And we're talking about the effort to, what the history of the ship and the effort to save this vessel to live forever here in the harbor so people can take advantage of its history and place and space. So how long have you been doing this?
I've been on board with primarily with Constellation since, let's see, October of 1998. So it would have been when the ship was still in dry dock out at Fort McHenry, and I wasn't really involved in the restoration. I helped paint a little bit here and there, but mostly I was getting things ready to open up as a museum once the ship came back from restoration. So that's what I did.
What are the ships are under your purview?
Along with Constellation, we have the submarine Torsk, the lightship Chesapeake, and the Coast Guard cutter Taney, and then the 7-foot Knoll Lighthouse as well.
Oh, okay.
So, and all our National Historic Landmarks, all are owned by the city except for the lightship, which is actually owned by the National Park Service.
But she's on loan to you?
On loan, actually, to the city.
To the city.
So, and we manage all the vessels for the city.
So now, is that part of us at all, like money to do that, all the money that's raised is a nonprofit? Is it state money? Is it city money? How do you do this? Is it tourists putting money in buckets?
It's always a challenge. Yeah. Like Nick just said, yeah, putting money in donation buckets. There's some of that. There's, of course, you know, there are admission fees to come aboard, which cover about 70 to 75% of what it costs to keep the ships afloat. We also do, there are also fees for education programming. We do overnight programs for school groups and scout groups and youth groups.
Sleep on the boats,
that's right, or on the ship. If you're on the submarine, you're on the boat, of course. We do overnights on board the Torsk and on board Constellation and on board the Coast Guard cutter. And that's, you know, the fees we charge are pretty reasonable, but they do help. They do help keep the ships afloat a bit. And then we do some fundraising events and some private events on board. You know, the vessels are available for rent, you know, if you wanted to have a private party, and those help. You know, what we try to do is sort of diversify our income streams, because it does help. And then for projects, things like either restorations or exhibits or things like that, there is an ever-decreasing pool of grant opportunities out there. It's tough times, and, you know, there are still some programs available, like Maryland Heritage Areas Authority. Since we are in part of the Baltimore National Heritage Area, where we can compete for that funding. Most recently, we received a Heritage Area grant for our dry docking out at Sparrows Point. And unfortunately, the federal program, the Save America's Treasures program, which was administered by the National Park Service, is no more. So that was cut out just recently. It's an extremely successful program, had saved countless And helped to preserve countless historic sites, and you know, across the country. And unfortunately, that is no longer. So hopefully, it gets reinstituted at some point. But
so tell us about. This ship we're sending on, this mm-hmm. the U.S. Constellation. This is a because it's got a storied history and a complex history, and one that had some controversy in the past. So
she does. Yes, there's always yeah. What, where would we be without controversy? Constellation, the frigate Constellation was built here in Baltimore in 1797. She was the first of six frigates built by the United States Navy to be launched. She was built right over in sort of between Canton and Fells Point on Harris Creek, which is now basically under the highway. There's not much there anymore.
A lot of creeks and rivers.
And so that's where she was built. She sailed until 1843. She was mothballed then at that point. And in 1853, she was basically deemed beyond repair. That's where the controversy sort of comes in, you know. Supposedly there are eight pieces of the original ship in this ship. Some people might argue that there are more. We know specifically from a newspaper account on the day of this ship's launch in 1854 that there were eight pieces. We don't know where they are. We haven't specifically been able to find them. But that's good enough for us. You know, there's certainly a provenance back to the original ship here. This ship is a little bit more modern design than the first vessel, particularly in her bow and in her stern. She's got a much more modern bow. If you were to put this ship alongside USS Constitution up in Boston, you'd definitely see a big difference. And she's been rebuilt several times as well, but always maintaining the same basic design. This ship was actually modernized in the 1850s.
This was the last... All sail ship in the U.S. Navy.
Right. Well, built by the U.S. Navy. There were still sailing ships sailing after this time, after the ship was built. But this is the last one actually built for the U.S. Navy.
Well, reading the history of this, what's interesting to me is that this ship we're standing on now saw action against the slave ships mm-hmm. when slavery. Mm-hmm. Importing slaves became illegal. This ship was in the Mediterranean and Africa stopping slavers.
Yes. She was basically her second cruise after her launch in 1855 was to the coast of Africa, which was also known as the Misery Station. It was not a very nice place to be. And
slave carrier,
you know, a slave captain. And Constellation was the flagship of the U.S. African Squadron. The African Squadron had been in place since the 1840s. Slavery, the importation of slaves into the United States, I think, was made illegal in 1808. There were various ways that people were getting Africans into the U.S., mostly through the Caribbean and then smuggled up. A lot of the Africans were not just, you know, destined for North America, but definitely South America and Central America. There were still, the market was still wide open there. As far as Constellation is concerned, she captured three vessels, two which were fitted out as slavers but were empty, and the third was a Barque, B-A-R-Q-U-E, which is a specific type of ship rig, called the Cora. And she had a human cargo of just over 700 men, women, and children on board. Those people were, when the Cora was captured by Constellation, the Constellation, of course, had a surgeon on board and some medical assistance. So they rendered assistance to the people who were on board. And they were subsequently brought back to Africa, but not to. And this was for pretty much all of the Africans that were liberated. They were not brought back to the Congo River area because they probably just would have been captured again. So they were brought to Liberia, which at that time was a U.S. protectorate, and they were brought there, and they were. To populate the region and to resettle there. And it was interesting, a few years ago we had a delegation on board Constellation from Liberia. We actually had the Liberian ambassador on board and a number of his staff.
As we speak today.
Yeah, right. And we got to talking about this, and they started thinking about this, and they said, yeah, you know, there are people in Liberia who are known as Congos, because that's their ethnic origin. They're not actually from that area, but their ethnicity is from further north, I guess it would be, around
south.
The Congo. South. Okay. Getting my geography backwards. But so you know, that's their ethnicity. So that, and they're still known that way today, which I thought was very interesting.
Free by the Constellation.
Yeah, well, and other vessels. During the 3 years that Constellation was the flagship, the squadron captured 14 ships and liberated just under 4,000 Africans. And then the British were actually much more efficient and on the ball, actually, than the Americans were. So they repatriated or liberated quite a few more. It's actually kind of amazing when you look at the history and you just see the numbers of people who were being, you know, transported. And, you know, when you think of it and the number of people who were actually liberated, you know, on the high seas by either the British squadron or the American squadron probably was small in comparison to the total number of people who were, even during that time that they were squadron, that the squadrons were there, you know, the total number that probably a lot of ships slipped through the cracks. Let's put it that way. It was a big ocean.
Big ocean.
Yeah. So
came over.
Yeah.
Or forced over.
Yeah.
So he was standing on this ship, this ship was in the Navy for a long time. I mean, this ship was in the Navy through the 20th century.
She was in and out of commission for 100 years, 1855 to 1955. And of course, if you count the frigate Constellation, it's almost 200 years of, about 160 years. So yes, there's up until, don't exactly remember the date of her decommissioning, but then the successor to this ship in name was the aircraft carrier Constellation. So built in the early 1960s. Mm-hmm. She's actually not in commission anymore. She's mothballed in Bremerton, Washington. But who knows? Maybe there'll be another Constellation sometime. So
what's the struggle here? I mean, this is. I mean, I've read that, you know, the ship was refitted in the 1990s, mm-hmm. late 90s, mm-hmm. and but using, you can describe it to us, using,
sure,
the kind of not the wood that you would have used, and so you're in trouble again.
Right. Well, she was. She was brought in 1992. She was condemned by the U.S. Navy as an unsafe vessel. The rig was pulled out. She was closed to the public, and they tried to, you know, basically the organization that was running her was tried to figure out what they were going to do. They really didn't. They couldn't come up with a plan. The mayor appointed, as I understand it, a blue ribbon commission to figure out what they were going to do and raise money. The city put up $3 million. The state put up $3 million, and they raised another $3 million or so in private and corporate funding to help to get the ship back to where she should be. She was brought over to the Fort McHenry dry dock, where. The certain things were done. One was, I mean, she was literally about to fall apart. And I remember being on board one time before she was, actually it was when she was in the shipyard and before they'd really started to do a lot of work to her, and it was a really rainy, horrible day, and it seemed to me like it was raining harder down below than it was raining on deck. I mean, it was, she was in bad, bad shape. They came up with this plan for restoring her, knowing that in order to do a traditional rebuild, where you would replace all the rotten wood with new wood and, you know, to the original design of the ship, in order to do that, it just would have cost an amazing amount of money. Somewhere, you know, at that point it was around $30 million, you know, probably now it's probably, you know, up around 35. It's just very difficult to get those materials. And when you do get those materials, to try and get the quality that you need, you know, to build something, you know, it's not difficult to find lumber for building a house and things like that, you know, but it's difficult to find lumber that's going to be able to last in sort of the outdoor environment. In the marine environment, you want, of course, you know, the best quality you can get. The ship originally was built with magnificent material. She was built with live oak frames. Live oak is a southern oak species, kind of those big spready oak trees that you see at, you know, in southern, along the coasts from basically South Carolina around to Texas. White oak for planking, beautiful, beautiful stuff. 50-foot lengths of 5-inch thick, 8-inch wide, totally clear white oak planks. Just beautiful, beautiful stuff. You'd never be able to find it these days. Never be able to find it. So the other goal in the restoration was to try and preserve as much of the original ship as possible. And if you do a traditional rebuild, like, for instance, they've done up in Boston with Constitution, you end up with not much original ship left. And I dare say that if a more traditional rebuild had been done of this vessel, there would probably be next to nothing original in the ship. There'd be nothing. As it is, right now, we've got about 50% original fabric. Not so much on this deck where we're standing right now, on the spar deck, and the gun deck below us is all new, but once you get down below that area, that's where we start to get into the original parts of the ship, and a lot of her framing is original. All that would have been lost if we'd done a traditional rebuild. So when they got her into the shipyard, they started taking things apart. And when they got to putting things back together again, I think that's where some of our issues lie now, because they were under the gun with, you know, even with the $9 million that they had, they were still under the gun with money and they were under the gun with time. They needed to get this done. They were being charged for being in the dry dock, as well as, you know, of course, all the labor and expertise it took to get the ship put back together. So they had some, they definitely had some constraints. So unfortunately what that led to in the last 13 years since the vessel's been back in the water is that subsequently, now that once she was brought back into the Inner Harbor, then we've had to deal with a lot of those issues that really weren't addressed. For example, some areas around the deck were never really caulked correctly. And this is a traditionally laid deck here. And so water started to get in down below. So we had to come up with, we realized that, you know, the ship being here in the Inner Harbor, she needed to have actually a different caulking system than a boat that would be going to sea. So we did that.
Preserves the wood, and this water can destroy
exactly,
the wood.
Exactly, exactly. Fresh water, rainwater, snow, ice is the bane of wooden ships. So that was one thing that we did. You know, we had to re-caulk this deck. We had some issues, and even before that, you know, there were areas that, you know, started to deteriorate. So we've dealt with that. And largely, the problems that we have had have been fairly manageable with the small crew that we have. They've been, and our volunteers, they've been fairly manageable. When we got the ship into the shipyard this past winter, in February, We had both the submarine and Constellation in the dry dock at the same time, which was kind of neat as well, just having, you know, the 20th century sub and the 19th century sailing ship in the same dry dock, made for some very interesting photographs. We saw, hey, there's a little spot there on the ship that we need to take a look at. And we thought, okay, well, maybe that's some worm damage. And then we started to do some research. It looked like worm damage, and we started to do some research. And there might be worms up here, but it's pretty rare because it's just the water is so fresh or brackish that they really don't live quite up this far. And then we started noticing where some of the hull, the laminated hull, had started to look like it was springing away a little bit. And so we started to do a little investigative work. And much to our great surprise, we found that the laminated, the interior two layers of the laminate of the laminated hull, and the laminated hull is four layers thick, so the interior two layers had started to rot because water had gotten in at the top of the laminate, and those two interior layers are actually diagonal layers. The outer two layers go fore and aft or horizontally. The interior layers go diagonally. So if water gets in at the top, it's going to go all, and the glue joints aren't that great. It's going to make its way all the way down to the keel. So when we started opening things up down there, I mean, water was literally pouring out of the inside of the laminate. Now, the things that rot wood live in fresh water, and they like they like a certain water content. They like to have some food, which is the wood, and a certain temperature, which is basically not freezing. And of course, below the waterline, it's never freezing. It might not be great in the wintertime for them, but it's never freezing. So most all of our problem, we think, is below the waterline. It's from the waterline down to what we call the transition plank, which is basically where we go from laminate to original planking. And there still is original planking on the bottom of the ship. There's still 12 strakes, which would be 12 lengths all the way fore and aft on the ship, which are original planking. And it's beautiful stuff, too. It's absolutely gorgeous material still.
Right.
And but our problem lies in the laminate. And so our plan right now is to, once the funds are raised, is to get her back into the shipyard for probably about 6 months.
So is there,
and I understand it's going to cost up to $3 million.
Our estimates right now are about 1.75. That's...
So, can we go below?
Yes, let's do it. Well, we're down below now, out of the wind, and we're on the gun deck. Right now, the ship would have carried 22 guns total, 20 on this deck and 2 on the spar deck above us. These guns that we have here are called 8-inch chambered shell guns. They would fire an 8-inch exploding shell. On this deck also, she would have had 4 32-pounders, which would have fired a 32-pound solid ball, much more like what people would think of as a cannonball. And then the two guns that were on deck were, and one of them was the one that we had the demonstration with earlier, were called Parrot rifles. There was a 30-pounder Parrot rifle in the bow and a 20-pounder Parrot rifle in the stern. And they basically fired a sort of a projectile that would be more in the shape of what we now know of as a bullet, but much larger. Those were actually rifled, so they... So as the projectile came out of the gun, it would be spiraling away, much more accurate, much like when a quarterback throws a football down the field. The guns down here fired a round shell. These are smoothbore guns, so what the sailors like to do here in order to hit their targets was they didn't actually lob the projectile over to the onto the deck or of another ship. What they would do is what they'd like to do is they like to skip the projectile over the waves, so that it was a little bit easier to aim then towards the hull of a ship. And then of course the projectile would embed itself in the hull, and then in the case of these it would actually explode. So
does this ship ever in its history see action like that?
This ship did not. No. She
never fired a gun in battle in 100 years, eh?
She fired actually towards the end of the Civil War. She was on blockade duty down in the Gulf, and I this might have actually been when she was on her way back up to Norfolk. But she fired nine shots in anger at a blockade runner that proceeded to steam to windward. And Constellation, being an all-sail ship, you know, could not make the chase. So that sort of...
This is New Orleans.
This is, this would have...
Louisiana.
Gulf Coast, yeah. I'm not exactly sure whether those nine shots were fired there or whether it was off the Atlantic coast as she was coming back up. But that sort of, you know, during the Civil War, you really saw that changeover from sail to steam. And Constellation, in the beginning of the Civil War, was basically she was the flagship of the Mediterranean Squadron. She was the only U.S. ship in the Mediterranean Squadron at that time, basically showing the flag there and looking out for Confederate raiders. Basically Confederate ships that would have been trying to capture vessels that were bringing goods and services to the Union cause from Europe. And a lot of people, when they think about the Civil War, they think, you know, about Antietam and think about Gettysburg. They don't really think about the naval campaigns, and they certainly don't think that things happened in Europe related to the Civil War. But actually one of the most famous naval battles of the Civil War was between the USS Alabama and the CSS Alabama and the USS Kearsarge, which was in the Bay of Biscay right off the coast of France. And little note of irony there, the skipper of the Alabama was a fellow named Raphael Semmes. And Raphael Semmes was a midshipman on the frigate Constellation before the Civil War.
And back there is the...
That's where, yep, the captain's cabin. We can take a walk back there and towards the stern. And on our way back, you can see the bilge pumps here. It's kind of a teeter-totter arrangement. That's the bilge and fire pump. Right there, yep. Yep. And they would actually, in order to prime this, they would actually... put caps on the surrounding structure there. They'd fill this with water and then start pumping. That would prime the pump, and then they would take the caps off where those holes are, and the water would just go right out on the deck. This is actually the weather deck here. So the deck above us, the spar deck, is pretty much superstructure, but this is the weather deck. And as we come back here... we start to, this is where the captain lived and presided. And generally he was the only person that lived back here, unless there was a flag officer on board, which would have been the case when the ship was stationed off the coast of Africa. There was a flag officer on board here as well, who's the commander of the whole squadron. And then the skipper of Constellation. So the flag officer would probably get the nice stateroom, and the captain would probably have to have the carpenter build him a bunk in the office, you know. So, but this is probably one of the this would have been the nicest part of the ship. This is where he would have the captain would have entertained. Had his officers to dinner, had dignitaries on board when they were in port. They would entertain regularly. They were, a lot of times, especially in the as part of the Mediterranean Squadron, they were they're on diplomatic missions. So they were there to show the flag and to entertain and put the best face of the United States forward. So
was this table part of it?
No, what's original back here are the panels and the doors, and actually that piece of furniture there, the sideboard, is original to the ship probably when she was stationed at the Naval Academy. The reason why we think that is because it's made out of white oak, and during the When this ship was launched, most of the furniture on board, and you'll see a piece down below when we get down into the wardroom, most of the furniture was of black walnut. That's what the Navy prescribed for their furniture. So anything that we have here that's a recreation is done in black walnut or made to look like black walnut. But we think that piece is from the Naval Academy days. And it's a beautiful piece, though, with the carved dolphins on the doors. And it's very neat. It's in need of some conservation care, but it's a very, very neat piece. So that's the captain's cabin, and we can head down below to the berth deck.
Tell me what you think is the biggest issue here about the survival of the ship.
We can head down, either ladder here.
Yeah.
For long-term survival, I mean, it's pretty much the same for any vessel or any, you know, historic house, or, you know, it's time, tide, and the elements, you know, that are what kind of take their toll. In the marine environment, I think that there's certainly things might be tougher than your typical historic house. I think our issues here are, you know, resources, manpower. There never seems to be enough. That being said, I think that we do a pretty good job of taking care of things.
Is there a danger, do you think?
There's a danger if we don't do what needs to be done, and up till this point we've been able to do that, then there's a danger that she would fall into the same state of disrepair that she was in early 1990s. It would be a little different then, because the hull's construction is different. So where you could, with the more traditional planking system that she had before the 1996-99 rebuild, she would leak. I mean, she leaked a lot, but I think with the hull system that we have now, with the laminated hull system, I think actually we might be. It's a little bit more difficult to do things like underwater fixes and with this type of system, because it really needs to have its integrity in order to work. It's structural and integrity in order to work. And so it's the engineering is a little different. And I think that it's probably, if with the system that we have now, and it should, you know, once it's repaired and we do it properly this time, it should last a good long while. But she's a wooden ship, you know, and just like the other ships are steel ships, and, you know, we always say, you know, in the perfect world, you know, we'd have them in glass houses somewhere. You know, there's a vessel in Sweden, in Stockholm, called the Vasa, which was pulled up in the 60s, and National Geographic did articles on it, and she was sunk in Stockholm Harbor. I'm probably going to get my dates wrong here, but I'm just going to say around 1500. She was brought up in the 1960s, and they literally put her inside a house. Now, she's considerably smaller than Constellation, but they've really been able to preserve her that way. Another example of a ship that still a little bit smaller than this one, but that is getting that treatment, is the Cutty Sark in Greenwich, England. And she's been in a dry berth for many, many, many years. But she was exposed to the elements, and she was falling into disrepair. And so the people who operate her managed to, I think, bring together the funds to put her actually undercover. And, you know, for some vessels, that's it's just not in the cards, you know. And so you work with what you have. There's another vessel in Britain that she's called the Unicorn, the Unicorn or the Trincomalee, one or the other, which was basically an original hull from the early 1800s. And she's basically forever and ever has literally had a roof over her, you know, like a shingle roof. And because of that, she's in pretty darn good shape. You know, but remember I was saying, you know, rain,
right,
snow, ice, that's what really takes it.
This ship's future is in the water.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And you know, I think it really reflects best on the city and to have the ship here afloat. And it is expensive to take care of her, but she is a national symbol. She's also one of three vessels in the United States that are probably that have been cited as really the most important historic naval vessels that we have, one being Constitution in Boston, the other the Olympia in Philadelphia, which is also sort of fallen on some hard times, and Constellation.
So we're here. This deck is where this is where the crew slept. I can see the hammocks.
Yes.
Swinging from the.
Yes. Yes. Right. We're standing. We're aft right now. We're more in the. You know. We're down back towards the officers' quarters, which is actually one of my favorite parts of the ship. Yeah. So all the staff officers would have been on the port side. The line officers on the starboard side. And one of the interesting things too about our exhibits down here is that all the photographs you see of the on these exhibits are actually people who lived in those cabins. We got a photo collection was donated to us a number of years ago of about 60 photographs of naval personnel. Basically, they called them carte de visite or calling cards, mm-hmm, with their photographs on them, and we could identify several of them as Constellation crew members. Some of them had names on the back. And one other interesting thing about those cards is there was one member of the crew, a fellow named Moses Safford, who was the yeoman purser on board during the Civil War, and we had always had a picture of him when he was in his 60s, and we're going through this whole collection of carte de visite, and we're like, he looks awfully familiar. It was Moses Safford when he was in his 20s, so it's kind of neat. And, you know, kind of this area of the ship to me really feels like people still live here. You know, so.
Ghost stories in the Constellation?
We have had some paranormal groups down here, you know, doing investigations. It's always kind of fun. You know, I have never had that experience, but I must say, you know, sometimes around closing time, you know, when it's dark outside and you're down here turning the lights off, it's, you're thinking, wow, there's an awful lot of history down here. I hope it doesn't, you know, like pop up in front of me.
Appreciate Chris Hossman on board today.
Well, you're quite welcome.
Appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Chris Rostrom, who is the executive director of Historic
Ships in Baltimore.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com.